There was no Drew McIntyre distraction or interference like I thought there would be. Gunther just beat him clean again. And I suppose if I can sit here and still want to see Sheamus win the Intercontinental title of WrestleMania, despite all of the clean losses that he has taken when challenging for that title, then you could say the same for Jey Uso, because he is still so over right now. So are we looking at a scenario where Jey Uso challenges Gunther one more time for the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania and finally wins it? Are we looking at a surprise Jey Uso win in the Royal Rumble? One cannot discount the possibility. I know everybody is talking about Cena and Punk and Roman and maybe even The Rock. I don't hear anybody mentioning Jey Uso's name, and I think it's time people started including him in that discussion for next weekend.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
I love you, Solo!
Mama Monster.
Conquered!
My home! You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
I have the best moveset.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
Yeah. I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
This is episode 899 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, February 2nd, 2025. Subbing for the Solo Monster this week is Jake the Snake Roberts, which is what I'm sounding like today. I've had better days, and if you've been following the streams really going back to Wednesday, it has just gotten worse and worse, but wasn't going to miss the Royal Rumble last night, second biggest show of the year. And I think those 3 hours last night streaming is what ultimately did me in here. But we are going to do this podcast today. I have a lot to talk about coming out of the Royal Rumble last night. I do apologize for the way that I sound. I am not feeling well, and my voice just seems to be getting worse. So hopefully we'll have to figure out what we're going to do after today as far as all the shows this week, because I don't know that this is really doing me a whole lot of good here, but we are going to get through this podcast. We have a lot to talk about. I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me last night. I want to thank everybody for all the support. I greatly appreciate it. I also want to thank everybody who dropped a PayPal donation this week. Of course, you could always contribute if you would like to. On thesolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal link at the top of the page. I want to say thank you to Big B, Bryant Becerra, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Portland Pop Star, Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker, Nayef Al-Safar, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, who was repping the sound off in Indy last night with Mama Eichard. Very cool. Tough Guy, Temjin Zephyr, good to hear from you. And no, I have not seen Aliens yet. Killshot, Keith Hart, Best in the Game, Trey Porter, who says Jey Uso wins the Rumble and Luka gets traded to the Lakers about 2 hours apart from each other. What a crazy night. Yeah, dude, I don't understand that trade at all. And Showtime, DeMarco Rodriguez. He has been a fan since the TV Tracks days. He's been in the Facebook group for 11 years, but this is his first PayPal drop, and he wanted to use it to give an early birthday shout out to his boy, Roundtable Robert Davis, who has a birthday coming up on February 13th. So he wanted to wish him a very public happy birthday. So happy birthday, Robert. And DeMarco, your question got cut off. Your message was so long. He said he had a question also, and that he just saw Jey Uso win the Royal Rumble match, and then your message just got cut off. So it's always better to email me your questions anyway, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Last night was the Royal Rumble. They claimed 70,347 as the attendance, even though on the lower third graphic during the post-show scrum, as Triple H was giving that figure, like literally on screen, it said 65,470. And as soon as he gave the 70,000 figure, the graphic that said 65K magically disappeared. They couldn't get that off the screen fast enough. Whatever number you believe, it was the all-time Royal Rumble attendance record. Evidently, it was the third largest single-night gate in company history. I mean, they're just setting records left and right. This is really just a carryover from last year. This is nothing new. But the show was well over 4 hours, which is pretty ridiculous for a four-match show. They have four matches on this show. And it included a 2 out of 3 falls tag team title match that couldn't even get 15 minutes. But despite the length, I thought it was a strong show with two enjoyable rumbles, more so the men's match than the women's match. But I didn't think either of them were bad. With maybe the greatest upset in the history of Royal Rumble matches, especially when you consider the star power they had in this one. Look at all the big names they had in there, who they ended up going with. It was definitely an upset. But I told you people, and you heard it right there from last week's podcast. You heard it at the top of the show. When I talked about Jey Uso coming out of Saturday night's main event and that loss to Gunther last weekend, even before he went out there on Monday night and cut that promo and said, I know I can beat him. I know I can beat Gunther, right? And you had to know that this was not over yet, that this was going somewhere. This was leading to something. But I said it last week. I said, people need to stop sleeping on Jey Uso as a possible winner in the Royal Rumble. And I said, are we looking at Jey Uso as a surprise winner in this 2025 edition? Because there is a story here, very obvious, clear story, that he is going to be the one to dethrone Gunther at some point. And WrestleMania, given the time of year it is, WrestleMania would make as much sense as anything for him to win the World Heavyweight Championship and prove all the doubters and prove all the naysayers wrong. That, you know, even though he goes around calling himself main event Jey Uso, there's a lot of people that don't look at him as a true main eventer. Even after last night, there's still a lot of people that do not look at him as a true main eventer. See, I thought the upset was a nice contrast to the very predictable finish that we got in the women's Rumble match with Charlotte Flair, you know, going to WrestleMania, which was, I mean, had to be expected. But I thought it was a nice contrast in that, you know, if you had Charlotte Flair, if you knew Charlotte Flair was going to be winning the women's Rumble, you know, for example, we did not need John Cena to win the men's Rumble in the same night and get two predictable finishes instead of just one. So it made for a nice contrast. There's been a lot of Jey Uso hate over these last, I'd say, 14 or 15 hours. And I think a lot of it is really over the top. And I'm not talking about the people who just think that Jey Uso is not a main event level in-ring caliber performer. Because bell to bell in the ring, Jey Uso does not match up to the elite in-ring main event performers, right? I don't think that that's a radical opinion to have. And I've had, you know, similar statements that I've made before. And if that's your opinion, then that's, I think, a perfectly valid opinion to have. But I'm seeing a lot of over the top hate, and I think some, at least some of it, stems from people who were just very upset that their favorite didn't win, that John Cena didn't win, that CM Punk didn't win, that they didn't go with a quote unquote big name. Like I said before, John Cena did not need to win the Royal Rumble, especially if Charlotte was winning the women's Rumble. And it appears that CM Punk is not going to be challenging for a title at WrestleMania. And that's not a lock, but it looks like he's headed possibly for a three-way with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. So if John Cena is the one going for gold in Las Vegas, he did not need to win the Royal Rumble to get there. And he did not, because it came down to John Cena and Jey Uso, which was smart. because, again, unlike the Women's Rumble, one thing you can't say about the closing minutes of the men's match is that, oh, well, we all knew who was going to win. Oh, it was so predictable. No, actually, it wasn't. And there were a lot of people who were legitimately thrown for a loop and just could not imagine that Jey Uso was going to win the Royal Rumble, but there he was. You heard the reaction when he won. It wasn't a reaction of disappointment. It wasn't exasperation. People were genuinely happy, you know, to see Jey Uso pick up the win. It's not very often that you really get a shock finish like that to a Rumble match, but it's like I said last week, it really shouldn't have been that much of a shock if you just pay attention to all the signs. They were all right there in front of your face. You know, I still ultimately went with CM Punk as my prediction because I figured they're probably still going to go with him. At the end of the day, I didn't, you know if they were going to pull the trigger on this or not. But why people were not including him in their conversations when they were talking about, well, you know, who's your pick in your dark horse, or who are the top three likeliest winners of the Royal Rumble? And he just wasn't being mentioned by anybody, and he should have been. But, you know, when the show was over, they were interviewing Jey Uso in the back. And, you know, he has not officially announced which champion he is going to challenge, but he made it very clear he wants another crack at Gunther because he knows that he can beat him. And that's the story. That's the story that they are going to tell heading into WrestleMania 41. Every time he's been in the ring with this man, he has fallen short. He has lost. But he knows deep down in his heart that he can beat this man. And so it's an easy story to follow. It's a lot easier when you have someone as over as Jey is to get buy-in from the audience to where it doesn't feel forced. You know, you do get the sense that people genuinely like this guy and they want to see him succeed. They want to see him do the impossible, right? He's the underdog, even though he's got the entire machine behind him. And he's part of the bloodline. And when you are part of this bloodline, clearly you are going to have a leg up on everybody else. I think that's a fair thing to say. WWE is very fond of the Samoan contingent that they have. And they get a lot of opportunities that, frankly, a lot of other people would not be getting, because the bloodline has been so successful for them over the last 4 or 5 years. So he has that working in his favor. But Jey Uso, over the last several years, has gotten over organically. They put him in a position, again, a very attractive position, which was rubbing shoulders with Roman Reigns and being featured in a lot of top segments on the television show. But you still have to organically get over with the audience. And he did in a way that his brother hasn't, you know, in a way that other members of the bloodline haven't, but he has. And I hear people with the criticisms about his in-ring ability and how limited he is, you know, in the ring. The way I would look at it is this. There's a couple of different things. Number one, look at John Cena. And if you're somebody who is upset that John Cena did not walk out as the winner of the Royal Rumble, right? One thing that has become very clear to me in watching Cena, even going back to his match at WrestleMania with Austin Theory, which I'd rather forget, John Cena is washed. The John Cena that we see in the ring now, this is not the same John Cena of even a few years ago, right? He's not the same guy. He's washed. But he's still John Cena. He's still one of the biggest stars in the history of this company. And he has a lot of fans. You heard the reaction when he came out last night at number 23. And I didn't even draw the comparison that other people did to him coming out at 23 and the whole, you know, Jordan number. But even though John Cena may be washed, right? If the story works, you have to tell that story. And the story for John Cena is his quest for number 17. Does that mean that John Cena is the best person to be a world champion in this company right now? From an in-ring perspective? Fuck no. Of course not. But He's a 16-time champion. Nobody in the history of this company has held 17 world titles. He's in his retirement year. This is it. And he's got one last shot to make history. How do you not tell that story? So, of course, they're telling that story, right? In ring, he's not going to go in there and be able to give you the kind of matches that he used to. He's not going to be able to give you the kind of matches that Gunther would give you. Or that some of the best in-ring performers in that company, a Seth Rollins or even a Punk at this point, somebody like that would be able to give you. But you have to tell that story. And I think at some point, yes, you have to put the belt on him. And he wins number 17. If the story works, you tell that story. This is a story for Jey Uso that WWE feels needs to be told. Because the fans are going to rally behind this guy. And they're going to want to see him win that world championship. You know, people also say, well, Triple H plays it safe. He does. He did it Survivor Series. He did it Saturday night's main event. Even Raw on Netflix, there were similar complaints. Well, you know, he didn't really do anything shocking or shake things up or anything like that. He plays it very safe. It's very predictable with Triple H's booking. Well, you can't say that about the men's Royal Rumble last night. And yet people are still very upset that they went with someone who was not who they thought it would be. But you can't have it both ways. By the way, I'm also old enough to remember a time where Vince McMahon would not always get behind somebody who the fans really liked if that person didn't fit his image of what he saw as a top guy, of what he saw as a world champion. And yeah, you'd have your Daniel Bryans, and every now and then somebody would squeak through. But he was very stubborn. He had his image, right, of who his champions would look like and how many people who could have been bigger than they were didn't get the chance. Well, now they're giving somebody a chance who normally you wouldn't expect to see in a spot like this. But they're giving somebody a chance who the fans genuinely like. Right? And that's the way it should be. The fans are the ones who are supposed to dictate that, not the promoter. Promoter is supposed to recognize all the signs and not be willfully blind and ignorant to them. The fans dictate with their wallets. They dictate with their chants and their signs and how many t-shirts they buy. And these days it's, you know, social media engagement. All of these things make up what is supposed to go into, okay, we're going to go with this guy over that guy, right? You make your voices heard. You dictate who you want to see in these spots. Right now, the audience has dictated that they want to see Jey Uso get his shot. You know, look, I was surprised by how into those near falls people were on Saturday night's main event last weekend when he wrestled Gunther. They really thought he had a chance. They really thought he might win that title. And they wanted him to. They were with it. They were into it. They wanted to see it. Now, you could look at WrestleMania last year, and Jey Uso had a horrible match with his brother. It's fucking terrible. And yes, Jey and Gunther, they've already had three matches before. It's not like it's a fresh match. It would not have been my first choice if I was putting together my WrestleMania card. This would not have been, you know, at the top of my list. But I'm not angry about it. I see the vision. I see the story. I understand the rationale behind it. I'm happy for the guy. And I'm going to let them play this story out and see where it leads. There could be twists and turns. You know, he could lose his shot. I don't see that happening. I think it's pretty much a done deal at this point. But we're only first kicking off this whole road to WrestleMania. So we'll see where it goes. Now, I had one person last night say that it also, in their view, helps elevate the World Heavyweight Championship because it really hasn't gotten the kind of attention that maybe it should. And it also makes the Elimination Chamber more important. And I think those are two very valid points. If you look at the two champions in this company right now, right, you may love Gunther and you may think he's a better wrestler than Cody Rhodes, but the reality is you cannot sit there with a straight face and tell me that Gunther has been positioned as the more important and the bigger of the two champions. He hasn't. And they told you that at Crown Jewel when they put them in the ring together and Cody Rhodes fucking beat him. That right there told you which championship they hold in higher regard. The World Heavyweight Championship has not really been featured all that prominently in the last several months. What this does is it at least guarantees, because of how over and how heavily they focus on Jay on the Raw brand, that it probably will get more attention than a lot of other matches that Gunther might be involved in would get. But yes, the Elimination Chamber is going to be very important this year. The Elimination Chamber, look, the reality is that championship, that WWE title, that's going to be the real main event of WrestleMania this year. Jay and Gunther, if it even closes the show, that's night one. But the bigger of the two main events will be Cody Rhodes defending against whoever his challenger is going to be, right? It was always going to be the bigger of the two matches. If you put Gunther in there with Logan Paul, if you put Gunther in there with Drew McIntyre, if you put Gunther in there with CM Punk, the WWE title match was always going to be the bigger of the two matches. This changes nothing. All those big names that got dumped out at the end of the Rumble last night, a lot of those guys are going to be in that Elimination Chamber in Toronto. And that includes John Cena. Because during the post show after the Rumble last night, Cena came out and he didn't take any questions. He said he was going to do things a little bit differently. I'm going to make a statement and I'm not going to take a single question. And he kind of was getting a little emotional and he was talking about how it really hit him last night. You know, that this was it. This was his final Rumble. This is going to be his final WrestleMania. He was looking up at the sign last night. And he realized, like, this is it. This is my last voyage there. And he said that what's best for business, he's always been about what's best for business. He says he hasn't headlined a WrestleMania since 2013. Now he says what's best for business is for him to win title number 17. And he officially declared that he will be in the Elimination Chamber and he is going after his 17th world championship. And he said that he's not doing this for himself. He's doing this for the person whose hand he will eventually shake when they reach 18 titles. So John Cena is in the Elimination Chamber. John Cena did not need to win the Royal Rumble because he can win the Elimination Chamber. And I think he will win the Elimination Chamber. And I think what we're looking at is Cody Rhodes defending his title against John Cena at WrestleMania. And we could have a whole separate conversation about whether or not Cena should even win at WrestleMania, or do you really drag this chase out, which I like the idea better of dragging it out, making people really want it even more. You have a whole year to work with here and he can win the title at SummerSlam, but I don't have an issue with him getting a title match at WrestleMania. If he loses, it just adds to the journey and to the story. And if he wins, then it's a huge moment. It's a huge history-making moment. But the Jey Uso stuff, just way, way over the top. And people need to calm their tits, is what they need to do. I see people saying, oh, he's just an entrance. He's just a, yeah. People said the same thing about Joe Hendry. Oh, it's just a song. He's not that great in the ring. What's so special about Joe Hendry? What's so special about Joe Hendry is that the guy went viral on his own and got himself over. The song was the conduit to that, but he got himself over. Yeah, he's not the most dynamic in-ring performer, but the people love him. And that's why right now he's the World Heavyweight Champion in TNA. Is he going to go out there and have five-star matches? No, but the people like him. And the people wanted to see him succeed. They wanted to see him win the world title. You can call him an entrance if you want to, and that's fine. You can call Jey Uso an entrance, and that's fine. He may not be the most dynamic in-ring performer, but this is a company getting behind a guy that the fans really like. They're trying to cement a new star. I cannot fault them for that, especially after years and years of them dropping the ball on so many other fucking people. And now they're in a position where they actually are listening to the fans. They see the numbers. They hear the fans. They see the reactions that he gets. And people are going to shit all over them for going with that guy. Just because why? He's not Roman Reigns. He's not CM Punk. Give me a fucking break. They had Rey Mysterio. They had Penta start out the Royal Rumble. They had a scary spot where it looked as if Penta's feet may have touched the floor. One of them definitely did. I'm still not convinced the other one did. I've gone back and watched it. It was too close for comfort, though. But outside of that one little faux pas, Penta was the Iron Man. He was 42 minutes in that Royal Rumble match last night. I thought he looked great. I mentioned Joe Hendry. He was in the Royal Rumble. Not a huge. He was a surprise, but not really. I think people had been expecting him to be in this Rumble for a while. I'm fairly certain that TNA waited as long as they did to put their world title on him, specifically because they knew he was going to be in the Royal Rumble. And he walked out there, and guess what? Guess what he had around his waist? The TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And he got a great reaction, and people sung the song, and he ended up getting dumped out by Roman Reigns. And look, I thought that he looked like a chump last night. And there's some people who disagreed and say, well, you know, he got dumped out by Roman Reigns, one of the biggest stars in all of wrestling. So, you know, he didn't get dumped out by fucking I Show Speed. Yes, but I look at it as Jordynne Grace last year. She entered as the Knockouts champion. She looked great, and she went 20 minutes, had a great showing. Joe Hendry, as the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, 3.5 minutes. He lasted 2 minutes longer than I Show Speed. You know, I get that it's Roman Reigns that eliminated him. There's no shame in that. Roman had just eliminated Sheamus right before. But when it's your world champion, like, I'm sure the TNA folks are going to smile and they're going to be thankful they even gave him the platform. They're just happy to be doing business with WWE. But there's no way that there are not people in that company watching that last night going, this is some bullshit right here. And if they feel that way, they would not be wrong. But it was still a big moment for Joe Hendry, and I'm sure that he's still going to be calling out John Cena. I know he was on Busted Open a few weeks ago saying he wants to have a match with him. Well, look, stranger things have happened. John Cena is in his final year. You never know. AJ Styles was the other surprise. He is back, which is great to see. I don't get the sense they really have a direction lined up for him for WrestleMania, but this was only his first night back. We'll see if they can come up with something for him. Drew McIntyre is somebody who was talked about a lot last night, even before the news broke about some backstage drama, just the way that he was eliminated from the Royal Rumble, very anticlimactic. And then there was a report from PW Insider. Mike Johnson said that something went wrong with McIntyre's elimination from the Men's Rumble. Now, McIntyre was eliminated by Damian Priest. So on the surface, it wouldn't seem to make a lot of sense because Damian Priest was just moved over to SmackDown. And as far as we know, Drew McIntyre is still on Monday Night Raw. They did say that the transfer window was closed as of the end of the Rumble this weekend. So it's possible that they'll announce on TV that there was a last minute deal made to move McIntyre over to Fridays. We'll have to wait and see. But according to this report, something went wrong with the elimination. And when McIntyre got to the back, he was, quote, screaming and cursing that someone had to get their moves in at the expense of a number of stories in the match. We are told that McIntyre pretty loudly stormed out of the building and was gone well before the Rumble match ended. Dave Meltzer then piggybacked off of Mike's report, said that there's a guy that a lot of people were pissed at in the match with the idea that he was trying to get himself over and not the match over. Noting that the name of the person in question will likely come out soon, but has not been confirmed by more than one source as of yet. It's multiple people telling me that the Drew thing was not an angle. He wasn't happy. And I heard that Drew was not the only one unhappy about the situation. Now, I've watched his elimination back, and nothing looks out of the ordinary. I mean, as far as like someone trying to get themselves over, the only thing I could think is Logan Paul. But honestly, you know, watching Logan Paul back, nothing looked out of the ordinary. You know, Logan Paul is a heel. He came out number 30. He was gloating and doing all the things that Logan Paul you would expect him to do. But otherwise, nothing looked strange, you know, and when he would get beat up, he would sell. It wasn't like he wasn't selling or was taking away from something else that was going on in the ring at that moment. Nothing looked out of the ordinary. So this could all just be a work. It could all just be much ado about nothing. They could be building to a Drew McIntyre, Damian Priest match for all we know. But, you know, if that really was the plan for WrestleMania, that would be very anticlimactic. That would be very underwhelming for Drew McIntyre. He really deserves something more. And outside of a match with Roman Reigns, outside of a match against John Cena, he was John Cena's final WrestleMania opponent, which I don't think he will be, because you would think if he was, that they would have set that up last night. You know, outside of those two things, I don't know what you do with him. You know, he's not wrestling Cody. He's not challenging Gunther. He's already feuded with Punk. That's over and done with. There just doesn't seem to be an obvious spot for him. So I think almost whatever they do with him, it's not going to feel like it's enough, because he truly has been one of their MVPs for well over a year now. In a huge breakout year in 2024, and just kills it, you know, every time with whatever they give him. If there is legitimate frustration with his position heading into Mania, then you know what? It's deserved. And he has a right to feel that way. But the way things have been set up, I just, outside of those two names, I just don't see what else you do with him. And based on what they did last night, it looks like we're far more likely to get something with Roman and Seth, or Roman, Seth, and Punk, than with Roman and McIntyre. And John Cena will be off doing something else. So whether or not this incident was legit or not, I'm sure we'll get more details. But again, I watched it back, and just to the naked eye, it didn't look like Logan Paul or LA Knight or anybody else was doing anything wrong. So, you know, I'm not really sure what he would be so upset about. Cody Rhodes retained his WWE Championship over Kevin Owens in a ladder match, a pretty violent ladder match as far as some of the bumps they took. And Owens got some color there at the end. Owens, I don't even know how he's walking today, if he's walking. But according to WWE, it was Cody Rhodes who came away from the match with multiple injuries. I have no reason to believe that this is anything other than storyline. But during the Royal Rumble post-show, Jackie Redmond said that Cody is dealing with multiple injuries. I can't confirm the intensity or severity of those injuries. Yes, because they were trying to come up with what they were. They're in the dictionary right now, trying to look up different body parts. What I will tell you is that they are bad enough that Cody will not be addressing the media in tonight's press conference. In fact, his in-ring status might even be up in the air as well. What I can confirm is that Cody will still attend Friday Night SmackDown in Memphis. See, so there you go. You got to tune into the TV show if you want to find out. It's almost like it's part of a story. Anyway, they had a great ladder match last night. Kevin Owens, not successful, which pretty much is his MO when it comes to title matches at this event. As I said last night in my review, out of whatever it is, six or seven championship matches, he has been successful in one. And that does not include last night. Sami Zayn came out during the match. He was so concerned about some of the punishment that Owens was taking. Came out to check on his friend. Never actually got involved in the match. And then when Cody was ascending the ladder to pull down the championships, Sammy was outside with KO, and he was just kind of looking up at Cody. He didn't try to stop him. He didn't try to interfere. And my guess is that is what is going to be the catalyst here for Kevin Owens to take issue with Sami Zayn. I had your back. You didn't have mine. You just stood there and watched as he climbed and took my championship. And that will lead to a match between the two. Now, there was no Randy Orton. Not only was Randy Orton not present for this match, he didn't interfere in this match. He was not in the Rumble at all. Like, he is still just not around. And I'm looking at this and I'm wondering if the plan is to do Owens and Zayn. And this is kind of always what I thought. You do Owens and Zayn at the Chamber. You know, the Elimination Chamber is going to be in Canada. And so you do the match with Owens and Zayn in Toronto. Then you have Randy Orton return. And you do Orton and Owens as the match at WrestleMania. That's what it feels like to me right now. If Cody is not going to be involved, so like we're not looking at Cody and Randy, let's say, then the play for Mania is probably Randy and KO. And the reason they're holding him out, they want this to play out first with Owens and Sammy. Because if Orton comes back now, it wouldn't make any sense for, you know, Owens to wrestle Sammy and for Randy not to get the match that he wants. So they're going to hold him out a little bit longer and let that match happen first, then transition into Orton and Owens for Las Vegas. That's where I think it's headed. Now, the Women's Royal Rumble, that had a much more predictable finish with Charlotte Flair winning her second Rumble, her first in 5 years, to punch her ticket to a championship match at WrestleMania. It could be Rhea Ripley. It could be Tiffany Stratton. I think we all know it's going to be Tiffany Stratton, which is a match that I'm fine with, and it's a match that is fresh, that we've not seen before. I know for Stratton, it's a big deal for her because she said that Charlotte is the reason why she got into this. Like, Charlotte is her inspiration. So I'm sure it's a match that she would love to have. One thing I didn't like was they did this huge cluster spot kind of late in the match where a bunch of women went out at the same time. And that included Bianca Belair, who was my pick to win, and Io Sky, who was my other pick if Bianca didn't win. And they went out at the same time along with like three or four other women to the point where like I missed that Io had even been dumped out. Like, it wasn't even that obvious at first. And it was like, that's it. But the reason they did it is because they didn't want to run the risk of having another popular babyface in there at the end with Charlotte and splitting the crowd. Or worse, if you're WWE, turning the crowd in that person's favor and against Charlotte. And Charlotte still got a positive reception when she won. But let's say Io Sky was in there, right? If Io Sky was in the final three was Charlotte, Nia Jax, and Roxanne Perez. If the final three included Io, right, she would have been the sentimental favorite. You can't tell me that she would not have been the sentimental favorite in that crowd. So instead it was Charlotte and two heels, including Nia, who is the biggest heel, right, in the women's division, at least for a few more weeks. Then it may end up being Charlotte Flair. Because once you give people a choice, I think between Charlotte and Tiffany, I think it's pretty safe to say, you know, who they're going to choose. But so that spot I didn't like, the way some of those women were just kind of unceremoniously dumped out. The reality is, like, as soon as Charlotte Flair was announced that she was making her return in this match, it was inevitable, right? I was hoping that they wouldn't. Like, I knew she was going to Mania to wrestle for a championship, but it didn't have to be this way. And I was hoping maybe they would give it to somebody else, but this was inevitable. This was the least shocking thing that took place on the entire show. There's a great showing for Roxanne Perez. She entered at number three, right? The Ric Flair spot. And she was in there at the very end. She was the runner-up with Charlotte. So that was a great spot for her to be in. The biggest surprise of the match would have been the return of Alexa Bliss, despite all of the contract ballyhoo that's been going around over the past week. She came out. She got a huge reaction, one of the biggest reactions all night. What does that mean for these contract stories? Was it a work? Was it all just bullshit from the beginning? Or did they work things out? I don't believe it was all a work. I do believe that there was a contract impasse that they had gotten to. But, you know, they were able to work things out. Look, this was Mike Johnson, a PW insider, very reputable, very reliable, who broke the initial story. It wasn't some random quack. And, you know, he even had reported that Alexa was originally supposed to return not in the Rumble, but at Raw in San Jose a few weeks ago, which was the night that Penta debuted. And it makes sense, you know, she came out last night and some people thought it was a work because, oh, they already had her merch, her new merch was up on WWE Shop. Well, yeah, I mean, they would have had her new merch ready to go a few weeks ago in San Jose if she was supposed to return then. But again, as that story goes, she was all ready to come back. Her representatives went to WWE, tried to negotiate a new deal for her that probably had more money and some perks that maybe she doesn't have right now. WWE's argument was, look, you've been gone for 2 years. You have time left and time that's been added to your existing deal because you've missed all of this time. We want you to finish out the rest of your existing deal before we have a conversation about a new one. You know, it wasn't like she could have just left. She was still under contract. She wasn't going anywhere, but they just reached an impasse. And clearly they worked things out, whether it was to her satisfaction or not. Did she get what she wanted? That we don't know. I thought it was pretty lame, though. You know, when she comes out and you have Pat McAfee on commentary and, you know, clearly they told the announcers, you know, take digs at like the dirt sheets. And he's like, I told you, you know, not to believe what you read in the dirt sheets. And Wade Barrett's like, you can't trust the dirt sheets. Michael Cole said, oh, I thought the internet told me she wasn't going to be here tonight. Right. And they were having some fun with it. And I just thought it was really tacky because, you know, the dirt sheets, as they love to still call them. And honestly, it doesn't even, that's an expression that it's so dated. Because it's referring to the newsletters. And, you know, while the newsletters, the Torch and the Observer, they do still exist. Obviously, this is a very different time, and it's not about newsletters anymore. But the dirt sheets are a lot more than just Meltzer. You know, someone like a Mike Johnson, who seemingly, unlike Dave these days, it seems, actually doubles and triple checks things before reporting on them. You know, he does very good work. And what you end up doing is you end up lumping the good ones in with the not so good ones and painting them all with a broad brush like, ooh, dirt sheets bad. And I just think that's a scummy thing to do. But Alexa was eliminated by Liv Morgan. And someone on the stream last night suggested that Liv and Raquel win the tag team titles and then defend them against Alexa and Nikki Cross at WrestleMania. Yeah, you know, remember, the Wyatt Six are on SmackDown now. And the belief is that Alexa is going to be on Raw. She's going to be on Monday nights going forward. So that does not seem very likely. Liv Morgan is on Raw, though. So they could easily start a program with Bliss and Morgan if they wanted to. Jordynne Grace, again, one of the worst kept secrets. Despite all of her claims that it was her mother's birthday this weekend and she was going to be elsewhere celebrating her birthday, she may have been celebrating her mom's birthday, but she was celebrating it in Indianapolis because she officially made her WWE debut. She was in the Rumble last year, but that was as a member of the TNA roster. And so this year, she is officially a member of the WWE roster. She has signed a multi-year contract with the company. And for those who don't know, she got an offer from WWE weeks before her TNA contract was up. And apparently this was with TNA's blessing, since they're working together now. And she signed the deal right after that match with Tessa Blanchard at Genesis, because WWE did not want her to hit the free agent market. They didn't want Tony Khan to even have a conversation with her. And in her interview that she did with Chris Van Vliet that dropped this past week, she revealed that TNA actually let her out of her contract early. And she made the request after Anthem terminated Scott D'Amore last year. She said, when he left, I was very emotional, like a lot of other people, because it was just so out of the blue. At the time, I was just like, you know what? I only really signed here because I had faith in Scott that he was going to do good things for me and good things for the company. He's the one that kind of set in motion the whole rebirth of TNA. And I told them I wanted my contract to be cut, basically. So it was supposed to be until October of this year. And I was like, I want to get out in January. Kudos to them. They heard me and they let me. So I'm very lucky for that. So that's the first time we've heard that her contract originally was supposed to go through October of this year. And TNA was able to work something out with her, and obviously now she's full-blown WWE. Now, she did not win, but she could still challenge Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania if she were to go to Monday Night Raw. And she absolutely should be on the main roster. So is that a possible direction, or are they going to save that spot maybe for a returning Becky Lynch, you know, and run back Becky and Rhea for the second year in a row? I don't think they should do that. But either way, Jordynne Grace should be on the main roster. Now, she did get eliminated by Julia, who happens to be the NXT Women's Champion. So I could see the two of them having a match, but she really needs to be on TV. And her against Rhea, I think it's a very real possibility for WrestleMania. So even though she didn't win the Rumble, she could be in a prime position still at Mania this year. And what a fucking match that would be. You do Jordynne Grace against Rhea Ripley? Sign me the fuck up. Julia was in the Rumble. Stephanie Vaquer was a surprise in there as well. Trish Stratus was another surprise. And Nikki Bella. And it had already been reported that Nikki was in conversations with them. TMZ reported on it. This was not a one-off. Like, Nikki Bella is back. What brand, I don't know, but she is back. And Triple H last night said that there are more returns to come as it relates to the women's division. Obviously, Becky Lynch is going to be back soon. And you would think he's also referring to Jade Cargill. I don't know who else he would be referring to. I've heard nothing about Carmella. You know, Carmella is still dealing with her foot injury. It's got like a nerve issue in her foot stemming from her childbirth. She's been having some real problems with that. So she's still under contract. She's still technically there. I don't think she's on her way back. Becky, Jade, I don't know who else he would be referring to, but they got a nice infusion of names last night with Jordynne Grace and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Bella. And, you know, Roxanne Perez, she should be on the main roster soon, if she isn't technically already being assigned to a brand. But she'll be there in short order. And that's exactly what this division needs. Honestly, you spread some of these names around between Raw and SmackDown. You give the women's division a nice little infusion of talent, or you get people back from injuries or contract issues. And that's going to be a big boost for that women's division. Adam Pearce, by the way, the Raw GM, has announced that the winners of the men's and women's Rumble matches will be on Monday's show, and they are going to also kick off Elimination Chamber qualifying matches. Didn't say who's going to be in them. And again, it's weird because John Cena has already declared. So whenever you have a situation where you have to qualify, it's like, well, yeah, I understand he's John Cena, but how is it that one person or two people, they can declare, but everybody else has to qualify? But when you're John Cena, you can get away with that. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. I may be losing my voice, but you knew I wasn't going to miss an opportunity to tell you guys about this. Have you ever browsed the web in incognito mode? Probably think you're browsing in private, but it's not as incognito as you may think. Google recently settled a $5 billion lawsuit after being accused of secretly tracking users in incognito mode. And their big defense? Incognito does not mean invisible. I'm sure that makes all of you feel so much better, doesn't it? In fact, all of your online activity is still 100% visible to third parties. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN, like I do. Without ExpressVPN, third parties can still see every website you visit, even in incognito mode. Your internet service provider, they can see you. Your mobile provider, they can see you too. Even if you're on a Wi-Fi network at school or at the office, guess what? They can see your activity too if they want to. That's right, your boss may be tracking your every move. What ExpressVPN does is it reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers so third parties cannot see your browsing history. And it doesn't have to be anything nefarious or embarrassing. It could just be that you don't want prying eyes to see where you're going when you're online. That should be your prerogative, not up to someone else. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because it hides your IP address, making it very difficult for third parties to track you. It's also easy to use, and it works across all your devices, phones, laptops, and tablets. And it's rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I've been traveling more recently for House of Glory, as you know. We've been doing more road shows, and I make sure when I'm browsing at the hotel, for example, that I'm connected to ExpressVPN. I don't notice any slower speeds, and I have the same peace of mind that I have when I'm working at home. That's important to me. And privacy aside for a moment, just to give you another reason why I love using ExpressVPN, I've been using it on my iPad to connect to a Canadian server so I can watch Monday Night Raw without commercials. And I could see the segments that take place during the ad breaks. So if you're a wrestling fan, and I know you are if you're listening to this right now, that's yet another reason to give ExpressVPN a shot. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 4 months free. ExpressVPN.com/Solomonster. One name absent from the Royal Rumble last night was JD McDonagh of the Judgment Day. After sustaining some pretty terrible injuries on Raw last Monday night, and as terrible as it was, it could have been a lot worse. He and Dominic Mysterio were challenging the War Raiders for the World Tag Team titles when McDonagh executed a springboard moonsault onto Ivar at ringside, but he did it on the side where the announce desk is, and it's a move he's done before, but this could have been avoided had he done this on the opposite side by the aisle because they have a lot more room. As he was rotating over, he crashed into the side of the announce desk, and the back of his head whiplashed hard off the top of the desk. And I shrieked when I first saw it. Michael Cole started freaking out on commentary. He was asking somebody, you know, like, legit, please come out here and check on him. And they showed a replay of it. It was just brutal. And he continued the match. They actually allowed him to continue. And he didn't just stand on the apron. Like, he was actively involved. He even hit another moonsault in the ring. Just absolute madness. I don't know if he ended up with a concussion or not. They never said he did, but they also didn't say that he didn't. But surprisingly, it wasn't his neck that he injured. He broke his ribs, I think two ribs, and he punctured his lung. And after the match was over, he collapsed in the back and he was rushed to the hospital. He tweeted overnight after the show, "First off, thanks to everyone for the messages and the concern. I'm good. I've got a couple of broken ribs and a punctured lung, so I'm going to be out for a couple of months. All things considered, it could have been a lot worse, so I'm grateful for that. See you in a bit." He really dodged a bullet there because that could have been so much worse. But even still, you know, broken ribs and a punctured lung, is no small matter. And I said it that night during my review. So it's not even like, oh, a hindsight 2020 kind of thing. Like, no, I said it that night. He should have been taken out of that match. And if that means stop the entire match, then so be it. But even if they just pulled him from the match and they left Dom in there by himself. Now, you know, Carlito was out there. I suppose they could have substituted him for McDonough if need be. But, you know, then you have issues with not warming up first. You're going into a match cold, which is how injuries happen. And it's probably more dangerous for someone like Carlito at 45 years old than it would be for someone half his age. But you got to get McDonough out of there. I'm sorry. Like, he was waving off the doctor at first. You know, supposedly Triple H was on headset communicating to the referee, asking over and over again, is he okay? Is he okay? You can't just take his word for it. You know, you can't take the talent's word for it. Of course, he's going to tell you he's okay. He may even feel okay. He may legitimately think he's okay. And it's not like he's hiding something. But he doesn't know the extent of his injuries. And that's when I thought it might just be a concussion issue or a neck issue. I never imagined that, you know, the way he landed, that he would have broken any of his ribs. Like, there's no way you can adequately diagnose something like that in 20 seconds. He should have been pulled out of there whether he wanted to be or not. It's a judgment call in these situations, but it looks so awful. And yeah, you got to judge each situation on its own and just based on how bad it looks, and it looked bad. I just don't understand how on something that looked that terrible, they allowed him to continue wrestling. I just don't understand it. Janelle Grant had until Friday to file her amended sex trafficking lawsuit against Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE. And it just so happened to be once again on the eve of the Royal Rumble. It was like deja vu from last year. On Friday, she did just that, providing, in the words of her attorney, new evidence that McMahon treated Ms. Grant as a commodity to sexually abuse and offer to other men. And the proposed amended complaint includes never-before-seen text and voice messages from McMahon and provides new details about how McMahon coerced Ms. Grant into sexual acts through her employment at WWE. Now, I wouldn't say there is a ton of new information here, but there is new information included. And the biggest thing is that she names names this time that we had only guessed she was speaking about in the original complaint, like Brock Lesnar, but now he's actually named in the lawsuit. Multiple times, in fact, including the part in the suit where she alleges McMahon offered a sexual encounter with Grant to Lesnar as part of contract negotiations with him. The suit also alleges that she was ordered to send Brock sexually explicit content of herself. Not that there was any chance that we were going to see Brock Lesnar in the Royal Rumble this weekend, regardless, but this should put to bed any talk about a Brock return to TV anytime soon. It's not going to happen. When and if he ever returns, it will not be until after this case is resolved, whether that's in a courtroom or behind closed doors in arbitration, which is what McMahon and Laurinaitis and WWE are asking for. They don't want this litigated in open court before a jury. Also, executives Nick Khan and Brad Blum are formally identified as WWE Corporate Officer Number 1 and Corporate Officer Number 2, respectively. A new paragraph says that Grant did not feel free to quit her job and walk away. It says, immersion in the legal department demonstrated to Ms. Grant the highly reactive and even retaliatory nature of WWE, such that she felt increasingly trapped. The lawsuit alleges that while McMahon was openly sharing explicit content of her with others, he also attempted to conceal his behavior by addressing WWE emails referring to Grant as Thomas Grant. There are also new text messages that show McMahon telling Grant what other men said they wanted to do to her. A new text message from in or about September 2020 had McMahon allegedly texting Grant to create customized pornographic content for producer Michael Hayes and his crew. So that's a new claim that was not in the original complaint. I don't recall his name being mentioned before. Another new claim describes McMahon video calling Laurinaitis and proceeding to record Grant while she was nude without her consent. The suit alleges that when Grant moved to Talent Relations, WWE constructed a new custom corner office suite to Laurinaitis' taste that shared a wall with Paul Triple H Levesque's office. The office had an internal door that connected directly into Laurinaitis' office, according to the suit. Khan and Blum were allegedly involved in the planning of this office. What it does not say, I should point out, is that Levesque was involved in the planning of that or that he was aware of anything. But, you know, this woman was there. And she had an office right there. Do I believe that he had no knowledge that there was some hanky-panky going on with his father-in-law and this woman? It's a tough pill to swallow. Like, I have no idea if he was aware of the depravity of what was going on, supposedly. But if any of this stuff is true, like, it sounds like it was an open secret among people in that office. Like, how could he not know that something funny was going on? It just stretches the bounds of credibility to think otherwise. But there is no evidence to suggest that he did know anything, even if she was just on the other side of his wall, apparently. The amended suit has a transcript of a voice message that McMahon left for Grant, repeatedly asking her to sign the NDA. At one point saying that, quote, "We need to work on this really fucking fast, otherwise I'm double fucked." Presumably meaning that he would be divorced and possibly be forced out of his own company. This is a transcript of that audio message. This is Vince McMahon, allegedly. "Hi, baby. I'm packing up because I got to get out of here and go to bed. I'm still at the office and I got a board meeting in the morning at 10 o'clock. In any event, on the agreement stuff, we have to do it, and here's why. Because there's a new twist in this fucking thing. Wow, is this ever going to end? So there's an audit committee. It's a public company, and if we don't get this done by the 31st, I'm fucked because McDevitt is in charge of this fucking audit of the books kind of thing. He's got to tell the audit committee there's no lawsuits. There's no pending this. There's no pending that. And he won't do and can't do it legally unless I get this thing signed. So we need to work on this really fucking fast. Otherwise, I'm double fucked. I'll be divorced. Aside from that, I'll be fucking, you know, I don't know what this is going to do in terms of," and then it says, "shit. If he and I don't get it done, he's got to go to the audit committee and say, by the way, here where we say yada, 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 Janelle. So now the board knows my story, knows what's going on. And it's like, oh my God, holy shit. You know, they kick people out of their own fucking company. That's not going to happen here. But oh my God, it's like public shit and all that kind of stuff. So I'm fucking tired of this shit. But in any event, sorry to be responding so late. But so we've got to get this fucking thing done so quickly, baby. I had no idea that McDevitt was, well, not turn on me, because that's not really the case at all. It's a legal deal, you know? And he can't say no to the audit. Or he can't say to the audit committee, no, I never told him any of this stuff. He wouldn't know. But now he knows. And now he's been involved in writing some of this and all that kind of crap. And I got to get this fucking thing done or I'm double fucked. So let's please get this done some way, somehow. Okay. I'm sorry, baby. We have to do it this way because I'd like to do it on a napkin too. But now I can't. What exactly would he like to do on a napkin? Maybe I don't want to know. Anyway, you get the gist. I'm not going to read the rest of this. You get the gist of it. According to the lawsuit, Grant agreeing to the NDA was entered, quote, "under duress and or as a result of fraudulent inducement engaged in by McMahon, and the same is void as a matter of law." So that's her argument for why the NDA should be null and void. Should this go to trial, that's what she wants. She does not want this to go to binding arbitration. That's what's stated in the NDA, that if there's any sort of disagreement, It's settled in arbitration. Her argument is the NDA is invalid, so therefore we don't do arbitration. We want to take it to trial. And by the way, that's a transcript of a voicemail. I would imagine that she still has the actual audio, though, if it's being transcribed, you know, verbatim like that. But this part here is pretty wild. This is from the complaint. McMahon recklessly obtained Ms. Grant's nude photos while being filmed for a documentary, and shots of him viewing her nude images aired on Netflix in 2024 for the world to see. And in the complaint, they include screenshots of him from the documentary sitting at the head of the table in this giant ballroom where they were having a production meeting. And you can see Michael Cole is sitting there in front of him. And he's looking at something on his phone, which we can't see what it is. But she claims they're nude images of her that she sent during the meeting. So that was from the Bill Simmons Netflix docuseries. And evidently they had no idea what he was looking at on his phone at that time. And think about what Vince said in that docuseries about having two different, I don't think it was two different brains. It's like he was describing how it's almost like he has two different computers in his head at any given moment, where one is like talking to you right now and the other one is thinking about something completely different. But then there's a third one. And when he gets asked by Bill Simmons, like, what's the other brain or computer thinking about? He said, something fun involving sex. Remember that line from the documentary? Like, holy shit. finally, you know, something he wasn't lying about. But there's images of the text messages in the complaint as well. Again, with photos from this big production meeting. And Vince is like, you know, like in his text message back to her, like, oh, check out Johnny. And then he's sending like a picture of the meeting. And it has her responses. It has her text message bubbles back to him with her saying, oh, he's adorable. And so when I send you a sexy pic, this is the meeting I interrupt, huh? Like, I wouldn't say they paint her in the best light either. But you can make of that what you will. McMahon's attorney, Jessica Rosenberg, called the amended lawsuit a publicity stunt in a statement. She said, as expected, the proposed amended complaint is nothing more than the latest publicity stunt in an ongoing smear campaign. It is filled with desperate falsehoods from a team that continues to disregard the law and the truth. And now we wait for the judge to rule on whether to allow Grant's amended complaint. Right now, it's only proposed. It has not been accepted. But once that is decided, the defendants will then have until February 21st to respond, the defendants being Vince, Laurinaitis, and WWE. And they would be expected to resubmit their motions to transfer the case to arbitration. And that would be the next big decision. And that's a major one. Probably the biggest one yet. That decision will tell the tale about how this case is going to go. Not one question, by the way, addressed to Levesque last night during the post-show scrum about the amended lawsuit. You would think, you know, as an officer of the company, and given that his name is mentioned in the suit and the timing of it, that it would have been an obvious question for somebody to ask. Like, even if you weren't expecting him to give much more than a stock answer, right? But, like, nothing. You know, given his answer from last year's Rumble, it's probably a good thing for him. You know what else is good for him? We have our headliner for the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2025. And it is not John Cena like I thought it would be. You know, we hear a lot from WWE about this being the Paul Levesque era. And it's only fitting that Paul Levesque be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And so he shall, as part of WrestleMania 41 weekend in Las Vegas. Triple H will get his solo induction into the Hall of Fame. The announcement came during a town hall that the company was hosting at its headquarters with employees. WWE has released video of what happened. It was the same stage where they hosted the Raw Netflix kickoff Levesque and Nick Khan, they were wrapping up their remarks when Shawn Michaels' entrance music began to play. And Triple H had a surprised look on his face that will likely become a new meme. Michaels danced out onto the stage, followed by The Undertaker, and they announced that because they were the two most tenured members, talent-wise, of the WWE family, they were making an executive decision to announce that Triple H would be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And Stephanie McMahon came out. She claimed that she had no idea that, you know, she wasn't clued in about any of this as far as what was going to happen. Yes, and she just so happened to be there that day, even though she doesn't work there. Why else would Stephanie be attending that town hall that day if she had no idea that her husband was being announced for the Hall of Fame? Now, whether Triple H knew or not, he played it up like he didn't. He said he was speechless. He didn't have much to say other than he was going to kill Nick Khan when it was over. By now, this time of year, they're usually already contacting people for the Hall of Fame. So it's hard to believe they kept him in the dark on things this long and that they hadn't already decided on a headline inductee and they started, you know, reaching out to people. Because Triple H is part of the decision-making process on that, if not the one who makes that call. But at the post-show scrum last night, he was asked about the Hall of Fame. This is what he said. Nick and I talked about the Hall of Fame many times, and he would always bring up the fact that, like, when are we going to put you in? And I would say, not now, because no matter how I do it, it looks like I'm putting myself in the Hall of Fame, and I'm just not going to do that. So he said that we have to do it eventually, and I was like, okay, if we have to do it eventually, let's wait 3, 4, 5 years, and then we'll talk about it. And he said, okay. We had an entirely different plan for the Hall of Fame, and we got to the end of the town hall, and Sean's music hit. I thought, honestly, being lazy, I didn't read the end of the town hall run sheet, and there was more after the Q&A that I just didn't see. And I was like, oh, Sean's going to come out here and talk about the new LFG show that we're doing and put that over. So I was confused when he came out. When Taker came out, it doubled, and then I saw Nick walk to the other side of the room, and I realized that somehow this is going to affect me. I wasn't sure if it was going to positively affect me or negatively affect me until Undertaker mentioned WrestleMania. So I wonder what their different plan was for the Hall of Fame, if they had a plan like who that headliner was going to be. But look, people are going to make jokes about him inducting himself into the Hall of Fame. It's not like he wasn't going in at some point. He's already in as a member of DX. This will technically make him a two-time inductee, but they're running low on potential headliners to go in. You know, Rock is going to go in when Rock is ready to go in. John Cena, I thought he would go in this year just because they have him for the year, right? Which is not entirely true because he's still filming stuff. The reason that he's been gone, by the way, since the Raw Netflix debut, he's been in Hungary filming a movie. And he said last night that he was on his way back to Hungary, I guess, to pick up filming. So we're probably not going to see him again until Elimination Chamber. So it's not really like they have him full time, but they do have him, you know, blocked off for all the big events this year. And you never know what his schedule is going to be like next year or the year after that. He may get even busier. So it just, you know, even though he's still active, right, they've put people in who are still active, like Rey Mysterio, right? He's still active. I thought for sure, you know, he'd be going into the Hall of Fame this year. But clearly they're not doing that. They could have gone with Batista, I suppose. I don't know what his schedule is like. Jericho, he's not going in right now for obvious reasons. Brock Lesnar's not going in right now for obvious reasons. Who else is left as far as like a headline attraction, right? Austin, Foley, Kurt Angle, Undertaker, Kane, they're all in, right? They're already in. It's not as if he doesn't deserve his own induction. He absolutely does. He deserves an induction for his in-ring career alone, which we know is over, right? He's never going to wrestle another match ever again. But then you add in all of his work with NXT and the Black and Gold era that he gave us, the Performance Center, what that's become. And that's to say nothing of his work now as the chief content officer. You can't say it's an accolade that is undeserved, you know, for whatever the WWE Hall of Fame actually means to you. To some people, it's just another way to sell tickets and make money. You know, to a lot of the talent, it's a nice little tip of the cap for a job well done in their career. And it's a platform for them to speak to their peers and to the fans, like kind of like one last moment in the sun. Although for Triple H, this is hardly going to be his last moment in the sun. You know, for other guys, they can charge more for their indie bookings and their convention bookings, you know, billing them as a WWE Hall of Famer. I don't think Triple H is going to be making his way around the indie circuit and going to, you know, WrestleCon. I don't think that's something he needs to worry about. But we know he's going to be in the spotlight for years to come. You look at his resume, 14-time world champion in WWE, worked with all the biggest names of the modern era. As I said many years ago, he was never the guy, but he was the guy who always worked with the guy. You know, would he have ended up in the same spot that he's in now had he not married into the family? Probably not. Marrying the boss's daughter definitely came with its perks. But you got to remember, he was sitting in on production meetings and taking an interest in stuff like that as early as 1997. I mean, when he was still dressing up as the Blue Blood from Connecticut. I'm sure Vince saw that and he took a liking to him and how interested he seemed to be in that sort of thing. But let's not pretend like him being in the room, you know, for those meetings wasn't a self-serving thing either. And look, it worked out in his favor. You know, one of my favorite stories was the WWE writer who brought Triple H the rundown, the script for that night's episode of Raw. Probably would have been 2002, 2003. Only for Triple H, like he opens his door and he's like, he doesn't even bother to read it. He just asks him, he goes, am I fucking going over? Like, that's just one of the all-time great stories. Or the time he was supposedly speaking up backstage in some meeting about Kurt Angle, who was going to be getting the WWF title for the first time. And I think Kurt himself may have told this story. But supposedly Triple H thought that Angle was too small and he wasn't believable. And it was Gerald Briscoe who spoke up and said, well, if he's so small and unbelievable, why don't you shoot with him and find out how much his size really holds him back? And Triple H backed down at that point. Like, these are all classic stories that have been told. Do I believe that every story ever told about his backstage politicking is real? Not every single one of them, but there have been enough of them to know that he played the game better than anyone and absolutely looked out for himself, right? A lot of people in wrestling have looked out for themselves and still do. But he was in a position that a lot of wrestlers would have died to be in, right? He was in a position that a lot of wrestlers were not, to influence things and to influence not only his creative, but other people's pushes as well. I remember Seth Mates, another former WWE writer, talking about how the original plan for Rob Van Dam was for him to beat Triple H to become the first world heavyweight champion at Unforgiven in 2002. And that got changed, right? And that's just one story. Like, how many more of those must there have been? Think about that. Of all the matches that Triple H and RVD ever had on TV or pay-per-view, I don't think RVD ever beat him a single time. Not once. So there's that side of Triple H. But there's also the Triple H, who was one of the founding fathers of one of the most successful factions in WWE history. I still believe that second version of DX, the one that was led by Triple H after WrestleMania 14, with him and China and X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws, I believe that to be the best version of that group out of all of them. And not just one successful faction, but two, with Evolution, which helped launch the careers of two men who went on to become future Hall of Famers themselves, and Randy Orton and Batista. His rivalry with The Rock and the matches those two guys had, they had great fucking matches. I think those two brought out the best in each other. his matches with Stone Cold. Look, Triple H was one of the beneficiaries of just kind of being around during the Attitude Era, as so many other people were, when Austin got hot and Rock got hot. And Vince McMahon was the luckiest promoter in the world that he had two stars the caliber of Austin and Rock who got as popular as they did at the same exact time. And that really helped light the territory ablaze, so to speak. And there were a lot of other very important supporting players. Undertaker, Mankind, some people, you know, Kane, Big Show. I'm not taking away from their own accomplishments, but they were supporting players in the overall cast. So is Triple H. And he got to work with all of them. He got to work with Rock. He got to work with Austin. His matches with Mick Foley, their street fight at the Royal Rumble in 2000 is the match that really elevated Triple H to main event status in a lot of people's eyes, mine included. His matches with Shawn Michaels, you know, the two-man power trip and their tag team title match with Jericho and Benoit in 2001, one of the greatest matches in Raw history. Tearing his quad and continuing the match. It's the stuff of legend. Last Man Standing with Jericho in 2000, the first Elimination Chamber match. WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan. Just tons of great matches. And then you throw in the work he did with the PC and NXT. He's certainly one of the most influential figures in WWE history, for better and maybe sometimes in the past for worse. But you can't say he is not one of the more influential figures in the history of that company. Look, you can go all the way back to the Montreal Screwjob, you know, and I know it was, Cornette tells the story about how exasperated he was because he was on creative at the time, Jim Cornette. And, you know, he was the one who kind of just tossed the idea out there about, you know what, fuck it. Just, you want your belt back, just fuck the guy over, you know? Moolah, the spider lady, Wendy Richter angle, you want to do something like that, just do it. But there was a phone call, a famous phone call that happened that had Triple H on there with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon. And they were talking about Montreal, and Shawn apparently was crying and getting very emotional and was of the attitude like, basically, you know, whatever, like whatever you want to do. And supposedly, as legend has it, it was Triple H, who at the time was like a virtual nobody compared to some of the, you know, the big names in the company, but he was buddies with Shawn. But again, I also think it speaks to how much Vince even then probably respected him, but he was the one who spoke up and said, basically in so many words, no, fuck that. He doesn't want to do business. We'll do business for him. Now, was that the catalyst, you know, for Vince doing what he did to Brett? Was it Cornette? Who knows? But I bring that up as an example, again, just to show how influential in many different ways that this man has been at various points in the history of this company. You cannot deny the man's impact and that he should not be in the Hall of Fame. I have no issue with it. The rest of my predictions for the Hall of Fame this year, you know, when I did the prediction show last year, I mentioned Sid Vicious, Haku, Mickey James, and Demolition. I hope we get at least some of those names in there this year. WWE has announced its first ever PLE to be held in Paris, France. Last year, it was Backlash in Lyon, France. But this time, they're headed for the capital. Clash in Paris. Talk about uncreative. That's the best they could come up with. Why not just stick with the Clash at the Castle name, right? They have tons of castles in Paris. I don't know why they wouldn't just call it Clash at the Castle Paris. Anyway, the event is set for Sunday, August 31st, which is the day before Labor Day, at the Paris La Défense Arena. And don't let that word arena fool you. It is touted as the largest indoor arena in all of Europe. It has a capacity of up to 40,000 for concerts. So it's basically like an indoor stadium. Not only will they be holding a PLE there on Sunday, but that Monday, Raw will emanate from the same venue. And that crowd in Lyon last year was awesome. Paris has a lot to live up to after that show. So we've got Elimination Chamber in Toronto on March 1st. Then they're on a European tour for like two or three weeks in March. Royal Rumble's already been announced for Riyadh next year. But we've got a Saudi show coming up in either May or June. We typically get Crown Jewel in November. I wonder, though, you know, with the Rumble 2 months later, I'm not so sure. I don't know. I mean, they just started the Crown Jewel Championship stuff last year. I wouldn't think they would just skip a year and then come back to it unless they bump Crown Jewel up to like June. I just don't know if they would want to go to Saudi in November and then come right back in January. But I would expect a couple of international PLEs, additional ones this year that we haven't heard yet. We might not get backlash at the Tokyo Dome like Meltzer wanted, but give it time. They may get there eventually. And Corey Hayes of Bodyslam.net first broke the story on Friday that Evolve is back under the WWE banner, as WWE, of course, acquired the Evolve intellectual property, I guess you would say, in 2020. For those who don't know, Evolve was an independent promotion run by Gabe Sapolsky, who now works for WWE. You have people like Drew McIntyre and Swerve Strickland, Matt Riddle, Austin Theory. They were among the names who have been world champion for Evolve. If you want to know what WWE would have done with Ring of Honor had they bought it and not Tony Khan, just look at Evolve. It's been a bunch of tapes sitting in a warehouse somewhere. Until now. He reported that tapings for a new Evolve show begin on Friday, February 7th at the WWE Performance Center. And then last night, during the Royal Rumble, WWE ran an ad confirming the debut of a new weekly series to air on Tubi, which is a free streaming service, very popular one, called WWE Evolve, featuring talent from WWE's new ID program. So it'll be talent with indie experience. Clearly, I mean, if you just watch the commercial, it looks to me like it's going to be a mix of ID talent and NXT talent, because in the trailer that they aired for it last night, they showed what I noticed. They showed Wendy Chu. They showed Joe Coffey. And I believe I saw Oro Mensah in there, right? These are all names from the NXT roster. So I'm assuming it'll be a mix of both. And that makes sense, you know, that they would want the less experienced talent working with the more experienced ones. I say less experienced. I mean, again, some of these talents on the independent scene that they're giving the ID designation to have been doing it for a very long time. And some of them aren't, you know, very experienced. Some of them are very young. So it just makes sense to want to have a mix of both. But that's not even the best part. Here's the kicker. The show premieres on March 5th with new episodes dropping every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Wednesday at 8 p.m. I don't know. Isn't there another show that airs on Wednesdays at 8? So now Tony Khan will have to compete with the developmental show of WWE's developmental show. If that isn't a slap in the face, I don't know what is. Not a lot to talk about on the AEW front. Nothing that's worth me straining my voice any more than I already have. Both Fightful and The Observer each had reports this week about Tony Khan being more in the weeds creatively with AEW. If that show on Wednesday was an example of it, then we need to buy a weed whacker and cut those fucking weeds down, because that was one of the most boring episodes of Dynamite that I've ever watched. None of the shows this week were all that exciting. Raw was better than SmackDown, but SmackDown was mostly a bore too. But that Dynamite show was just largely no good. Even still, Tony Khan had something to gloat about this week, with both Dynamite and Collision doing their best ratings on ITV in the UK. On Twitter, he wrote, "According to ITV Sport, this week, Dynamite on ITV4 had our most live viewers ever in the UK. This past month has been our best UK ratings run ever, with the all-time record set this week. Both of our AEW TV shows, Dynamite and Collision, set all-time records for most viewers ever in the UK this week. What an amazing milestone. Both Dynamite and Collision set all-time..." I swear to God, this is what he said. all-time UK viewership records in the same week. He tweets the way that The Rock cuts a promo. He repeats himself a lot. So there you go. Some good news for him to hang his hat on. There's a reason they were able to put 72,000 and 50,000 people respectively inside Wembley Stadium. They have a loyal fan base over there. I wish I could be as excited for these shows as they are, but even if I pretended to be, I'm not that good of an actor. Claudio Castagnoli beat Jeff Jarrett on Dynamite this week, which means that for now, Jarrett will not get a shot at Jon Moxley's AEW World Championship, but it took three men, Claudio, Wheeler Yuta, and Jon Moxley himself, to beat Double J. And I've had a few people attempt to explain this to me that, you know, why would Moxley see fit to interfere in this match? Here's why. Because I asked the question the other night, like, why would Moxley see fit to get involved here? Like, he doesn't trust Claudio. Despite all of the infighting that all three men in that four-way had going into World's End, he still had no problem putting his title on the line in a four-way match. That was his idea, to defend against Orange Cassidy, Jay White, and Hangman Page last month. Or I guess it's February, in December. I'm still thinking it's January over here. Right? So some people tried to explain it to me. None of their arguments hold any water because it just makes very little sense. And the match on Wednesday wasn't very good either. Now, they also tried to take a stab at explaining the why behind the Death Riders. Over 4 months into this angle, and they're finally trying to really explain it, which included the most unintentionally hilarious moment of the week, with Renee asking Claudio what their main objective is. And Claudio made it very clear, we don't want to kill AEW. Like, our goal is not to destroy AEW. It's just the opposite. Only to then have her ask Pac the same question and have him respond by saying their goal is to burn AEW to the ground. Like, let's say the idea is to, like, burn it down and then remake it in their own image. Like, it still seems to me like mixed messages are coming from the Death Riders on exactly why they came together in the first place. Like, that's the part of the promo they did not air on TV on Wednesday, because this all came from a YouTube video, like a YouTube feature they did. So they showed highlights on Dynamite, but they didn't show that part. Gee, I wonder why they left that part out. Maybe they realized it's as stupid as it sounds. I'd like to burn this entire angle to the ground. Can we do that? Adam Copeland formally challenged Moxley for the AEW World Championship at Revolution on Collision last night. I don't even see the point in them announcing a Moxley title match for Grand Slam if they're already promoting Mox and Cope for March 9th. The fuck are you going to give Jay White a title match for in Australia? Right? They haven't announced that match yet. I'm just saying they shouldn't bother, because it would just be dumb. Nobody is going to believe that Jay White has a shot at winning. So why even bother having him defend the title before then? Mercedes Moné and Yuka Sakazaki had a fine little match. In no way should that have been the main event of that show on Wednesday. Now, they didn't have a lot of great options outside of that, but in no way should that have been the main event. Apparently, they had plans for Powerhouse Hobbs on the show. I don't know what those plans were, given that he was supposed to wrestle Big Bill in a street fight on Collision. Apparently, that was the original plan, and they taped Collision that night after Dynamite. So I don't know what he would have been doing on Dynamite. It might have just been a promo. I have no idea, but he suffered a legitimate injury the previous week on Collision. Nothing serious, but I guess he got to the venue and they would not medically clear him. So that caused some changes to the show. I honestly don't think it would have made that much of a difference. That show was just a total miss. This week, we've got Swerve Strickland against Ricochet. That should be good. Will Ospreay is going to be wrestling a mystery member of the Don Callis family. Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshi to take on Buddy Matthews and Brody King. And Tony Storm takes on Queen Aminata. And finally here, we got our list of subjects for the sixth season of Dark Side of the Ring, which is returning to Vice TV on Tuesday, March 25th. And it is not radically different than the first list reported by Greg Oliver of Slam Wrestling back in December. The only name he included in his list that did not make the cut, and it's possible they did interviews for it, and it just didn't come together, was for an episode on Test, the late Andrew Martin. Otherwise, it was mostly bang on. Here's the list in no particular order of episodes. Superstar Billy Graham, one of the most influential characters of his time. He directly influenced three of the biggest names in wrestling: Hulk Hogan, Dusty Rhodes, and Jesse Ventura. He had a run as the WWF champion. Probably was not as long as it should have been. I think he had it for about 11 months. And then later in life, he ended up with all sorts of health issues related to his years of steroid use. Ludwig Borga, who lived a very interesting life as a wrestler. And when he worked for WWE, they discovered that he had a small Nazi tattoo on his leg that they made him cover up. Yeah. An MMA fighter. He was actually Randy Couture's very first opponent in the UFC. And a pro boxer who later served as a politician in the Finnish parliament. So he wore many different hats during his life. He was also committed to a mental hospital and later died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And I should mention he had a part as one of the bad guys in Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is one of my favorite movies. But I'm glad they're doing this. This is one of the topics that I had pitched. I just think it just sounds like a very interesting personality to cover. As was Daphne. I had pitched her as a potential topic for the show. Daphne, the Scream Queen, is getting an episode as well. That one is going to be the toughest one to watch. One of the more memorable early rants that I ever did on the Sound Off was for TNA's treatment of Daphne during her run there. Eddie Gilbert, wrestler and booker. He was only 33 when he died of a massive heart attack. Tony Atlas is getting the Dark Side treatment, so get those shoes ready. Billy Jack Haynes, who is currently incarcerated for allegedly murdering his wife a year ago this month, in fact. He was a big star in the Pacific Northwest, not so much in WWE, although he did have a match on that legendary Silverdome WrestleMania. Billy has, if you look up Billy Jack Haynes, like shoot interviews, like he has told some stories. He's a very colorful guy. Whether you can believe any of them is a different story, but he is quite the storyteller. You want to go down the rabbit hole, try Googling Billy Jack Haynes and the unsolved murders of the boys on the tracks. And you'll get some interesting backstory there. Other topics include the original Sheik, Muhammad Hassan, Big Van Vader, and Hell in a Cell. They're doing a Hell in a Cell episode, which, based on the trailer, it looks to have a very heavy focus on Undertaker and Mankind at the King of the Ring in 1998. Other ideas that I've pitched before, and I think maybe they absolutely could still do if they do a seventh season. Rick Rude, Ashley Massaro. I always mention Sweet and Sour, Larry Sweeney. I think more people need to know about how great he could have been. There's still other people that have not gotten attention that I think if they needed more content for more seasons, I know some people think, oh, it's the show's jumped the shark. But unfortunately, in the wrestling business, there really is no shortage of content and dark content and very flawed yet interesting, let's say, personalities that they could cover. I mean, shit, you could do an entire fucking season on Vince McMahon alone. Let's take a few questions. I was going to take more, but I'm on my last legs here, guys. So let's take a couple of questions from the mailbag. You could always email me, the Solomonster, at gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Steve from Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Been a fan of yours for years. Listened to the whole 5-hour 500th episode. Wow. Looking forward to the 10-hour 1,000th episode. Oh, God, please, no. My question is, could you see WWE doing Rock versus Cena 3 at WrestleMania? Also, do you think that December will really be Cena's last match and they won't have him retire at Mania next year? I find it hard to believe that heading into Mania season, he is going to retire. No, we're not getting Rock and Cena 3 at WrestleMania. I don't think we're getting Rock Cena 3 at all. And yes, I believe Cena when he says that when this year is over, he's done. Not only is he done, he says we will never see him again in the jorts, like the jorts and the hat and all that. He goes, it's over. It's done. It's like Undertaker. Undertaker has said we're never going to see him dressed up as the Dead Man Undertaker ever again. And so far, he has lived up to that. Although, didn't he make an appearance at some event in Saudi Arabia? They gave him like a full entrance, and I thought he came out dressed up as the Dead Man. But at least as far as WWE TV, he said we're never going to see him dressed up as the Dead Man again. Cena said the same thing, and I believe him when he says that when this year is over, that's it. He's done. He will not be wrestling at WrestleMania next year. Andrew, in Tucson, Arizona, your all-time favorite Royal Rumble is the 1992 match. What are your top Royal Rumble pay-per-views? You know, I have been sleeping on that 1990 match. I just watched it the other night. I was sick as a dog. I couldn't sleep. And they had just uploaded it to the Vault channel on YouTube. And I watched the entire thing. It's been a while since I have. And that's a great Rumble. And I'm talking about just the Rumble match. Like, that's a great Rumble match. And just as much star power, if not more, than 92. So I would put 1990 in the top mix for sure. As far as overall Rumble pay-per-views, I think 2000 has to be on the list. It probably number one, honestly. You got that street fight with Triple H and Cactus Jack that put Triple H on the map as a main eventer. You have the tables match with the Hardys and the Dudleys. Taz, his debut against Kurt Angle in Madison Square Garden. We'll forget the Mae Young stuff. Pretend that didn't happen. And then I would say 2001, which had a great Rumble match, but had an excellent ladder match with Jericho and Benoit. And from what I remember, a pretty great WWF title match with Kurt Angle and Triple H. And Ray in Arlington, Texas. I've been thinking about how the WrestleMania 41 card will play out. If I were booking, I would have Bron Breakker defend his IC title against two legends who have never held that title, Sheamus and John Cena. In this scenario, who wins? Does Bron somehow retain? Does Cena win, which results in Sheamus snapping? Does Sheamus get his big moment? How would you have this play out? I would have it not play out because I wouldn't do the match. I don't like that match. I think it's unnecessary. And I think that there's far more value in telling those stories, if you're going to tell them, telling them individually. You know, doing Braun against Cena one-on-one or doing Braun against Sheamus again one-on-one. I've had a lot of people ask me about the Cena Intercontinental title story they could tell. They're not telling that story. And if I were booking, I wouldn't tell that story either. That's not the story. The story is not John Cena going after a mid-card title that he never won when number 17 is within his grasp. Like, you could tell that story with Sheamus because Sheamus has won every other title of any relevance. And, you know, he's got that personal connection when he talked about how much it meant when he was a kid, and that's what got him into wrestling in the first place. You know, was watching Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon and people like that. That's his story. And I think Sheamus should get his moment. I think WrestleMania would be a great place to do it. I don't know if they're going to, but I'd love to see it. John Cena, I have no interest in seeing him win the Intercontinental Championship because it's just, it's so beneath him. And the story and focus needs to be on title number 17. And you muddy the waters if all of a sudden you go from that to, oh, I'm going to win the Intercontinental title. Nobody cares. Like, not enough people give a shit. It doesn't have the same impact. So John Cena should have absolutely nothing to do with the Intercontinental title whatsoever. I'm fine doing that with Sheamus. You don't do it with John Cena. All right, that's it. That's all I got for you guys. I don't even know how I got the hour and 45 minutes that I did. I have no idea. I apologize again for not sounding my best, but I wanted to give it a shot, especially coming off the Rumble. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about that and Jey Uso and everything and the Triple H Hall of Fame news, the Janelle Grant stuff. I mean, there was enough to talk about. I really wanted to try to get through it if I could. And you know how I hate missing these shows. I very, very rarely will miss a Sunday show. I'll miss a stream if I have to, but I don't like missing the Sunday shows. So we got it done. With any hope, I will hopefully sound a lot more like myself next weekend, because I certainly don't want to sound like this for episode 900. You believe this shit? 900 episodes of The Sound Off next Sunday. I don't know what's going on with the streams this week, especially Monday night. I'm hoping to do one, but honestly, we're just going to have to play it by ear, because I think I just need to give my voice a chance to heal. I'll let you guys know what's going on, if there's going to be a stream or not. I'll keep you posted on probably on Twitter. Thank you for all the support. Thank you for everybody who hung out with me last night on YouTube. We had north of 3,600 people, and I'll be back with you very soon, whenever that may be. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, a great rest of your Groundhog Day. And I will see you back here next weekend, Super Bowl weekend, hopefully for 900 episodes of The Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Not only did Powerhouse Hobbs not win the AEW World Championship today, which is no surprise, but they actually destroyed his leg. And right after they stomped on the fucking chair, you think you know me. And here comes Adam Copeland and FTR, who were standing there at the go position, just waiting for their cue, watching, I'm sure, on a monitor as this man was maimed by the Death Riders. Can't go out there without my music.
I need my music right now. Come on, man.
As soon as they hit the music, out they came. See, now, if I'm Powerhouse Hobbs, when I come back from this injury, I'm going after Cope and Bald and Hair for not coming out and saving me here in this spot, for being a couple of selfish, spineless assholes.
Where's the fucking music?
We can't go anywhere until the music hits, so let's let this poor fucker get his leg destroyed first, and then we'll run after
him. Please, for the love of fucking God, put the music on.
That's who Hobbs ought to go after. Very, very stupid.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good,
the bad,
and the ugly.
Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Solomonster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Solomonster.
I love you so long.